There's nothing unusual about a kid being a picky eater. I was a picky eater. My son would subsist on fish sticks and Cheerios if I let him. But Casey Rom took this to the extreme. In fact, for the better part of a year when she was 11 and 12, she hardly ate anything at all. This goes back to a specific incident when, after a school lunch of turkey and mashed potatoes with gravy, she got really, really sick. And a quick warning, while there's nothing too gross in this story, it does get into what happens when you get food poisoning.
I just remember, like, stumbling around the house and barely being able to move and body aches and just throwing up so much that, like, there was nothing left at a certain point. And genuinely feeling, you know, in my small mind, like, I'm going to die. This is how I die. And after I started getting better and I wasn't violently ill anymore, I managed to kind of get away with skipping meals, because it's normal to kind of lose your appetite after an illness like that. And then after a couple weeks, I started to notice that my parents were watching me a lot more closely at the dinner table. If they turned away, I would shove something in my sweatshirt pocket, and then later I'd flush it down the toilet. So I knew that I was being watched, and I knew that what I was doing was, like, not normal, but I didn't really think that it was a problem. Like, in the actual act of throwing up, which can be very mundane for some people, I always felt like I was, like, choking for air and, like, I couldn't breathe. And I think that's really what it came down to. And just, it never occurred to me until then that, like, something I ate could cause this to happen to me. And I think that's, you know, early connection when you're that young. It's easy to just say, I got food poisoning. Food can be poison. Food is poison. And that was basically my thought process from then on. My sister started taking notice, and she started kind of getting almost sassy with me at the dinner table, like frustrated that we all had to just keep sitting there staring at me when we had other things we could be doing. And I couldn't get through to them that the reason I didn't want to eat was because I was afraid of throwing up. It's for some reason that didn't connect with me verbally, even though that's what connected with me internally. And that manifested in my mom having to come to school every day at lunch and sit and stare at me while I ate whatever thing that I had deemed safe that week. Having a very high-achieving sister and someone that was that much older than me that I looked up to so much, it always hurt me to think that I was disappointing her, even more so than my parents. And my parents were doing their best, and they loved me and they wanted to fix me so much, but I didn't feel the same just overwhelming sadness at disappointing them as I did for my sister. I do remember around that time becoming more aware of the internet and trying to seek answers for myself, because I wasn't getting them from the doctors. And at one point I Googled, I'm afraid of throwing up. And I'd never really used the word afraid before. I would say, like, I don't like it, I don't want to. And so once I searched, I'm afraid of throwing up, it finally connected it to a phobia, emetophobia, which is a legitimate phobia, pretty common one, in fact, especially among women. And once I saw the word, I could search the word, and then I found support groups online and stats and treatment options and different things. So I knew that this was a real affliction that other people were feeling. If it had a name, that maybe I could find a doctor who knew that name. And I ended up printing a bunch of pages, like pre-Wikipedia, whatever I found with the definition, and just kind of sliding them under my parents' bedroom door before bed one night. And they still didn't quite understand what was going on, but they at least were happy to see what I was happy to see, which was that it was a real affliction. And then they found a nutritionist who had heard the word and knew the word and even knew that it had recently been connected to anorexia. And I started seeing this nutritionist, and she put me on a treatment plan that was kind of like a reverse Weight Watchers. It was like portion based. And so she told me she wanted me to eat something half the size of my fist every hour. And it could be anything that I deemed acceptable to start. So that was pretty low commitment. I could eat 5 slices of banana or 7 almonds or something like that, because my fist was very small at the time. And after a couple of weeks of that, it escalated to something the whole size of my fist every 2 hours. And then, you know, 2 fists every 3 hours. And before I knew it, I was kind of eating meals again. And with my anorexia in recovery, I realized that I still needed to recover from the emetophobia, that a lot of the fears and the symptoms were still there. And if I did get into a situation where I felt like I might be sick, if I had a stomach ache, I would, you know, pace around my house and cry uncontrollably, and I kind of developed this mantra, and I would just repeat it over and over and just like walk around the house going, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm not gonna throw up, I'm not gonna throw up. Nobody really understood what it was, but they were just happy I was eating. And so for a long time that kind of fell onto the back burner. When I was 16, my sister was in college, and she was studying abroad at the time in Prague, and she really wanted me to come visit her. I think she was feeling a little homesick. I was really, really scared. I was afraid of the airplane. I was afraid of either getting sick or sitting next to someone who was getting sick, or, you know, airplane food or weird food in a foreign country that I've never eaten, or water in a foreign country that I've never drank. And I immediately kind of went to all these scenarios, but ultimately it came back to that same thing that pulled me out of my eating disorder, is this idea of not wanting to let my sister down and wanting to, you know, be there for her the way that she had always been there for me. And I said, yeah, I'm going to go. And I did go. You know, I made it onto the plane and I didn't get sick, and I made it to Prague and I didn't get sick. And I was there for a little over a week, and I flew back, and everything was fine. And on top of not getting sick and realizing that I could experience something without throwing up, and that those two things weren't intrinsically linked, I also realized that I really enjoyed traveling and seeing a new place, and I didn't want that to be taken off the table forever. And I kind of tested it again after college. I found an opportunity to teach English in the Republic of Georgia, and I ended up in a village with a host family, kind of in the middle of nowhere, with foods I'd never eaten and well water that didn't always agree with me, and power outages rendering refrigeration pretty much useless. And I knew then too that I had the same choice, this, you know, choice that I had when I was a child, where I could risk these things or I could starve. And ultimately I knew that starving hadn't worked for me before, and that it wasn't going to work for me now. And I risked it, and I did, you know, I got food poisoning more than once while I was there, and I threw up more than once while I was there, and I still cried, and I still said the mantra, and I still panicked and paced around the house. But once it was over, I realized that it wasn't as bad as I built it up to be. I'm never gonna like it. I'm never gonna enjoy it. I'm always gonna have panic attacks before I throw up. I'm always gonna, you know, cry and say the mantra. But ultimately, I can recognize now that it's just a moment, And it's just something I need to get through. And it's not something that I need to occupy my life with.
Casey Rahm is active in live storytelling in Seattle. She has now traveled in 29 different countries.